Ignition sequence start. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Liftoff.
Check, 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 check. I literally just create madness.
Boiler up.
I'm going to go off here.
They don't have a great quarterback.
I got to take a break. I'm getting in trouble.
To win the Big Ten, you first got to win the West.
Bad Bunny.
Have you heard his name in a while?
No.
Has it bothered you?
No. Defensively, they got to come in with some confidence.
Is that even analytics?
I am in a parking garage. I'm kind of lost.
Terrence Shannon, Matthew Meyer, RJ Melendez, Coleman Hawkins.
He's dropping presentations on and over.
I didn't come here to go 5-7.
I'm so proud of Illinois football right now.
I'm so tired of Joel Embiid.
We're not taking Patrick Corbin.
I want to bet the Bears.
Oh.
You are Reba McEntire's niece.
Roshan Russell.
Coach Bielma.
You know, love.
Yeah, salute to yourself.
What?
We got all kinds of things for you here.
There's a lot of glass.
Oh.
Guys, we have breaking news.
Uh-oh.
It's the drive.
Smack dogs. Golf course
memories,
not good. Not when someone mentions Lick Creek Golf Course, I shudder. I'm just like, blah, blah, blah. That course kicked my behind a few times. So if I never play Lick Creek again, I'm fine. Hey, how are you?
Hey, what's up? It's the drive with Sam Piper, ESPN Radio 93.5. Derek Piper Lante talking a little golf before the show. I haven't played that many courses. I did play U of I this past weekend. And
oh, sweet.
Got my first birdie out there. I'm no...
Nice.
Not even average at golf, but...
Hey, but that's great.
Yeah.
That's awesome. If we could just get as many birdies as we do bogeys, wouldn't that be great?
Yeah.
Isn't it amazing how easy it is for professional golfers or guys that you know that are good? Like, Lucas played Orange yesterday, mm-hmm. Lucas and Andrew, and he had 5 birdies. Jeez. But I'm like, wouldn't it be... You know how easy it is for guys to, like, a par for them is fairly easy. You know what I'm saying? It's not, but for them,
they're
always kind of putting for a birdie, or they've got at least a legit shot at a par. Meanwhile, I'm off the green about 30 feet on my par. You know, I'm like, well, I got to chip in for a par here. And it's just like, how do these guys make it look so stinking easy?
I don't know.
I really, truly think the driver is everybody's enemy. Because it puts you in a bad spot. Now, if you're on with it, or if you're one of those that can hit a driver straight, then kudos to you. Hallelujah. But I slice mine. I'm always in trouble on my second shot. And I really, honestly, I've got this little, it's a 5-wood essentially. And I call it snake eyes because it says it on there. So I just call it the snake. If I would hit that off every tee box, I would be in the middle of the fairway. Mm. Now, I would be further back, obviously, from where my drive would be. But I guarantee you I would improve my scores by 4 or 5 strokes. It would just, but you know what? Every time when I go out there, there's that driver in the bag, and I'm like, ooh, boy, I could hit the driver here.
You want to let it fly, but then you're chasing it another fairway. And
exactly.
That's kind of
so I need a friend. I either need my kids or a friend or someone to meet me at the golf course like we're going to play, like you and I.
Yep.
And then you sneak over and steal my driver and throw it back in my truck, and I don't realize where it's at. And then I'd have probably the best day of my life.
There you go.
There you go. How is everybody? Yeah.
Doing good. I played the blue course. I'm not very good.
No.
Bill from Troy asked in the U of I Atlantic Link text line. I played the blue. I got a birdie on 3. I needed it after hole 1. I think I got a... I don't even want to say.
Isn't hole 1 a par 3?
No, it's a 5, I think.
Is it a 5? Oh, yeah, okay. Maybe I'm thinking 10. What's the hole right by the clubhouse that goes directly
south. Yeah.
Is that 10? I guess I was thinking that would be.
It's the 10. First hole of the front or the back nine.
Okay, so it's number 10. All right. I was thinking for some reason that was one. But yeah, you normally wouldn't start a course with a par three, I don't think, on one.
I think so. I tripled one. Needed that bird on three. The way I celebrated my first birdie out there, people probably. I don't know. There wasn't too many people out there, but you'd think I hit a hole in one.
Did you like strip naked and run around or something?
I mean, maybe just let out a yeah.
Yeah, baby. That's what you should. I think all golfers should sell it. Although the problem is I'd yell and somebody would be in the backswing. Yeah. So I guess that's probably not the right thing to do on a golf course.
Not that serious.
It is cool to birdie, though. It really is. Everything has to go correct on a hole. And then all of a sudden you're standing over an 8-foot birdie, and it's like, if this drops, oh, I missed it. Hey, but I parred. That's awesome.
There you go.
Did you go over and put the circle around it?
No, I didn't.
Oh man, no. That's like
my brother was keeping score. I should have done that. Took the honor.
You should have gone over, written down your three or whatever. Was it a three? I assume
three on a par four,
and then.
Put the circle.
Around.
I was more worried about counting beers than.
Well, okay. I was going to say you had other problems. Yeah, not other problems. You had other things to do. So yeah, no, that's a good point. Hey, Brett Bielema spoke today.
Yeah.
Does this mean we're kind of out of summer?
I think so.
Like not out of summer. I'm talking for the
just
radio.
The dead of
right
sports.
Because we had Coach Bielema today. Tomorrow is Aaron Henry, defensive coordinator, and a couple of players, two or three players, and then. Saturday, Barry Lunney will meet with the media and then a couple of two or three of the offensive players. So all of a sudden now we call what we call in this business, we have content.
Mm-hmm.
So that's nice. That's nice to have.
Especially when the Cardinals couldn't carry us. Oh, the Cubs goodness. Have heated up yet again. Their
they
offense
have.
Exploded last night, and we can talk about that as we go along. But, yeah, there is that. You always call it the dog days, and you try to get creative in terms of what you can talk about. But – sometimes we just look at each other and like, how we feel in 2 hours. But now that football has really ramped up, although I will say this, as it goes on Twitter, I scroll through you know, every day, and there's so many training camp clips out there from around the NFL. You'd think everybody's primed to have their best season of their career. It's so hard. It's like overload now. At first, I'd see a bits and pieces of highlight, like, George Pickens for the Steelers pulling down a one-handed grab. Like, I'll look for him in the fantasy in my fantasy draft. But now if I did that, I got a list of 500 dudes who are about to either have the best career, the best season of their career, or a bounce back, revitalize. I don't know. But
it's so true, though, how that we could all fool ourselves into thinking that we're going to have a pretty good season. Hell, I was reading Cardinals baseball notes today thinking, I think they'll be pretty good next year. Mm-hmm. And I thought, Lon, stop. What? You don't even know what they're going to do yet. I mean, they better do something.
We need the optimism. But we are going to play Brett Bielema as we go along. Also, Terrence Shannon Jr. caught up with the media yesterday. He was one of four players, and we wanted to get you some of that audio. He discussed about – because we never got Terrence on the show after he decided to come back to Illinois.
Yeah, we didn't we?
He does discuss that decision, his development, and then going into his fifth and final year in college, and what he – feels like he can do in his final season here in Champaign. So we'll play that as well.
They leave tomorrow?
They do.
For Spain. I wonder, is that like what about a 6-8 hour flight?
Sounds right.
I think it's like 6 to London, isn't it? Or I think
Chicago to London is about six hours.
Okay.
It felt like longer than that when I flew it on the Italy trip, I can tell you that. But I know that the team is going from Chicago to Dallas, I think, tomorrow.
Oh,
maybe
okay.
Champaign to Dallas. Yeah, you obviously have that. That flight, and then Dallas to Madrid.
Okay. Do they fly charter?
I don't think so this time.
I am not comfortable in a plane, and I'm 5'11 and a half. I think I'm shrinking, so I'm no longer 6 foot. You get the point. I'm 6 foot, let's say. I am, like, uncomfortable with, like, my knees. I always want to stretch my – I always have to get the aisle. I'll pay extra to get the aisle. I don't ever pay the extra to get the emergency rows, the exit rows or whatever those are. I need to, but I'm always like, that's another $18. I'm like, I don't know. That's three drinks on Allegiant on the way to Florida. So I'm like, all right, do I need that much leg room, or do I need my three drinks? And so I always opt for the drinks, and I just get the aisle.
Get the aisle, yep.
But what I do, though, is I keep my head on a swivel, and I basically put my knees or my feet out into the aisle. But you really have to keep your head on a swivel, because I feel like people move like cats on a plane. Like, they're quicker than what they normally walk. I don't know. It's almost like you're on a treadmill in an airport that moves. Like, you'll see out of the corner of your eye, like, an 84-year-old lady get up 8 rows ahead, and she's on you like that. And you're like, oh, sorry. And so then I feel bad, and I'm like, oh, God, Lon, just put your feet back in. But then I can't imagine, like, Coleman Hawkins on a plane. Mm-mm. I mean, I assume he can't, when he stands up, he probably hits the overhead luggage, I would assume, and then probably almost hits the top of the plane. That would just be... Man, I'd love to see a video of that, of those guys flying.
What if for Italy, Kofi didn't actually have a passport issue? Oh, he just didn't want to fly 8 hours across the pond and just like threw his passport out the window.
I wouldn't doubt it. I wouldn't blame him.
Like, I'm 7 foot, 300 pounds. I'm not getting on a plane.
No way.
For that long?
I just can't imagine that. The longest I've ever flown is Hawaii. I've been there twice. And that's almost unbearable to me. Like, after a while, I'm just like... You can't ever, in that span of 8 hours, you can't ever sit there and say, oh, we've only gone 3 hours. You just cannot allow your mind to get there. You have to mentally win that battle. Like, you just kind of cross it off. And then the one time I'm flipping, I think we were in United, and I'm flipping the thing in front of me, and I hit a button, and it shows you
the flight track. Yeah, man.
And all it is blue. And I'm like, well, I hope we don't have any problems.
At that same thing flying back from Italy.
Because even if we make a pretty nice, you know, captain whatever in New York that landed on the river there, even if we make a nice little landing.
You don't got anywhere to go.
We're not surviving that one. All right. There's Jaws down there just circling for me. Yeah, gosh, that's not bad to think about, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, well. I guess planes are still safer than cars is what they say. You're safer to fly than you are to in a car. So there you go. I guess that's the case.
There you have it.
But back to them. Yeah, I just can't imagine that kind of a flight over there. But, you know, I'm sure you're pretty excited, number one, going over to see Spain. And I think Brad Underwood said yesterday, nobody has been in Spain. Nobody. Like him, none of the coaches, none of the players. So that'll be cool for all of them to kind of experience Spain for the first time. That'll be kind of neat.
Absolutely, yeah.
Pretty neat.
We did try to figure out yesterday on the show, is it – tapas?
Oh, yeah, tapas. That's right.
In terms of the food they have over there, I've had some people say it's good food, but it's just less familiar to me than, spaghetti in Italy.
Right. I couldn't pronounce the top 10 foods in Spain. I couldn't. But I'm sure they're all pretty good. They're all, like, spicy. It feels like spicy, and I don't think I would like that. I don't. Is anybody media-wise going?
I don't think so.
Anybody from the Inquirer?
No, we discussed it and considered it, but ultimately did not pull the trigger on
that. The Golden Boy, Brett Behrens, is he going?
He's not, no.
Wow.
He's not doing it.
Man, that shocks me that somebody wouldn't be going. You'd have all-inclusive for Illinois stuff. You should go, Pipes.
Last minute.
Probably a pretty expensive
trip. Drop it on Haley
trip.
Tonight. Yeah, I'm going to Spain tomorrow.
Oh, by the way. Drop it on Jeremy, like right now. You got to text him during the show so he can't get a hold of you and just say, hey, by the way, I'm going to Spain. And you're paying. No, that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Well, okay. I'm hoping they go over there and kind of figure things out. I was watching, I know the Inquirer, I was on YouTube today to kind of listen to Brett Bielema a little bit, but I saw the highlights that the Inquirer, I don't know if that was you or...
Jeremy was shooting those.
Jeremy, okay. We looked pretty good because nobody missed.
Funny how highlights work like
that. It's amazing that, and honestly, it was like 4 minutes of highlights, so I just assumed it would just be like a running 4 minute thing, but he actually edited them.
Mm-hmm.
So, but like it took me like the first, like after about the sixth bucket, I'm like, now wait a minute. Surely we missed a shot. But
if you would have seen the actual first 4 minutes of what we got to watch, it would, to put it kindly, more defensive oriented.
I'll say this, it wasn't smooth. The team didn't look that smooth. But again, you know, you're competing against each other. You everybody knows the play you're trying to run, or they get the idea of what you're trying to do. So I could understand how maybe the scrimmage wouldn't look like as smooth as possible. But there were a couple of nice plays. Ty Rogers is good with the basketball.
He is.
Really good.
He looks pretty agile. Mm-hmm. Like, he's dropped 15 pounds. I know he updated us on that when he spoke on our airwaves back in late June. But to be able to drop from about 220 down to 205, and I think he's good off the bounce and get where he wants to go.
Yep.
I do want to see him use that left hand when he gets inside on that left
side.
He did go right.
He goes
right hand.
Yes.
And I'm not really worried too much. I know a lot of people come back to the jump shot, and yes, it's going to be something that teams are going to sag off of him, dare him to shoot, not really respect that area of his game. But I think he can exist well enough out there even without taking a bunch of jump shots if he can attack off the bounce, make good decisions with the basketball, and just get other people involved.
Can he be the kid from Penn State?
Pickett.
Is that just the...
I mean, I think the difference...
Is that a lazy comparison?
Not necessarily. I think he can bully ball some people, for sure.
I agree. I totally agree.
Or as Brad Underwood called it, booty ball some people.
Booty ball.
And really back you down and force some of those small guard matchups to come and double team and make those decisions. Now, Illinois, do they have the shooting around Ty the way that Pickett had it with Seth Lundy and Andrew Funk? I would say not to that level, obviously, but... one other difference is that Pickett last year shot 39-40% from three.
Oh, that's true. Like you had to honor that.
He was really shooting the three himself well and was also able to make some mid-range. So that's kind of a difference there. But, I mean, we also saw, and this isn't a fair comp either, but as in terms of like a bigger wing who turned out to like a big point guard, Evan Turner at Ohio State had his final year there. He's a pretty good player.
Yes, he was from the state of Illinois.
But against, St. Joseph High School with Demetri McCamey.
That's right.
But also someone that made jump shots, and we'll see what that brings for Ty without being that much of a threat. Although he did hit like a 12-foot pull-up jumper yesterday, but still not really a strength of his game.
There was a shot in there of Coleman Hawkins making about a free throw line kind of right in there, elbow jumper. And it's the same thing. He paused, looked to pass. Paused, shot it, made it. And I'm like, he's got a good enough jump shot. I'm not like, as an Illini fan, after a while, I'm like, okay, enough. Like, you're not making shots tonight, so you need to quit shooting. But I'm not talking about just Coleman. I'm talking about everybody. But Coleman, I honestly wish, and I know that this is like, I'm not alone here. I mean, even the NBA scouts are saying you need to shoot the ball. I think he's got a good enough jump shot to shoot more often. I don't know why he doesn't have enough presence and or confidence in his shot to just let it fly. I wonder why that is with him.
I appreciate the unselfishness
part
of it, but it's gone too far, I think, in many instances. And last year he really talked a lot about, I've studied a bunch of Draymond Green and just that type of, okay, I'm going to get the – and Draymond, the way his game is – progressed or kind of regressed in the NBA is that he's not shooting jump shots like he did earlier in his career. So it was all, as soon as he gets the ball, it's pounding on the floor and trying to create off the dribble to find that next pass. And I know the staff is trying to tell Coleman, limit the number of dribbles you take.
Yes.
If you're open, be confident in taking that shot. The efficiency has to go up with it. You have to make those shots at a high enough rate. Then there is that, okay, if he's going to shoot it every time, if he's only making one out of four, one out of five, then it's not a quality look. But I agree, one of the plays early in the practice segment we saw was kind of that turn and face 18-footer that was a little bit more quick decision. Okay, I got this space, I'm going to shoot it. There was another one that he did make, but it took him time to get there on all right, looking for reads, what do I do here?
That's what he did.
And that's just kind of the hesitation. And then – also, there were a handful of instances where he kind of reverted back to last year, was I'm open, but I'm looking to pass. Let me put the ball on the deck and over dribble, spin move. And he threw one out of bounds. That's kind of last year Coleman Hawkins. Again, it's one practice.
Right.
It's still early in the summer, but that is a necessary progression for him, is that the NBA wants to see you're open with from 18 feet, maybe from three, catch it, shoot it, and make it at a decent rate, because we think the way it comes off his hand, it should be a decent percentage shot.
I think it's a pretty shot. I think what they could do is at the end of a practice, at the end of a pretty tough practice, Brad Underwood ought to just say, all right, we're scrimmaging full court, and we're not stopping until Coleman Hawkins scores 30 points. And honestly, think about that. So every time down the court, the goal would be to get the ball to Coleman, and his goal would be to score. I think that would be great for him. And then it would take all – it would almost then put the onus back on him. Like, if I pass this, now I'm hurting the team. Well, in a good way, they'd still be running, right? It'd be like a drill of – honestly, it'd be like a what am I trying to say when you run? A cardio. It'd be like a cardio drill at the end, but yet in his mind – he then has to go into beast mode every time down on the offensive end to say, give me the ball. I've got to get to 30 before we can hit the showers. I think that'd be a great – I think they ought to do that. And just look at me, just putting together practice things for Brad Underwood. Hey, I was going to ask you – I know we're going to listen to Brett, I think, next segment. I wanted to ask you before we do it – maybe we can take a break. I wanted to ask you like three storylines – that you're kind of wanting, you know, obviously we want to know how good Luke Altmyer is. But like three things that are on Derek Piper's mind as football begins. Because I think that'd be interesting. And I wonder what our listeners at 359-2255, what are some big things that you're wondering about as football begins? Lucas mentioned Matt Bailey. Is he hurt?
Is he?
I don't know. Here goes the left-handed type. I should have checked this. See, this is what I do. And for 13 years, here's what I do to the show. I bring in like a 50% thought. Instead of like going the extra effort and finding out if Matt Bailey is hurt, I instead just throw it out there as a, is Matt Bailey hurt? And then I let everybody else look. Isn't that horrible? But we can't afford any injuries in the secondary.
No.
That's for sure, but maybe he was lying. I don't know.
I will have to look this up. I'll figure out an answer during the break.
Okay.
Yes, I will brainstorm, and I'd like the text line to do so as well. 217-359-2255 on the U of I Atlanta Link text line. What is some things that are on your mind as we gear up for training camp? And it's exciting to get that kicked off, and Brett Bielema to hear from him here in a few minutes. That will be good to get back in that football mode and start to be thinking. I'm already thinking about that Kansas game, man. I know the team can't afford to look past Toledo.
Right.
When that game gets here, I'll be fired up for it. But that's really the one that I've got my sights set on, and it's like a month away. So
I know.
I'm pretty pumped. But we'll catch a break. We'll talk some more football when we return. This is The Drive.
Illini fans, take the opportunity to head down to Game Day Spirits Green Street location this summer. Shop their awesome selection of Fighting Illini merchandise. While you're there, shop some of their awesome buy one, get one free t-shirt designs, as well as their Nike section and so much more. With new styles coming in daily, there's sure to be something for every Illini fan. Shop at the corner of Neal and Kirby in Champaign, 6th and Green in Campustown, and online 24/7 at GameDaySpirit.com. Game Day Spirit, where Illini fans shop.
Hi, I'm Steve with Restoration Urban Ministries, and we have a desperate need. We have a building that's coming down, and we have to put up another one. But we have you, and we have God on our side. So August the 12th, we are going to have at Hessel Park in Champaign, family, food, and fun. We're going to have 5 to 10 different church bands playing. We're going to have speakers. We're going to have testimonies. We're going to have food. We're going to have sausages and barbecue and corn on the cob, all kinds of summertime treats. And we're going to have a lot of fun going on. We have different games for the kids. So we're counting on you to come and join us and participate and help us raise money for a new building. In Jesus' name. You can come and visit us at www.restorationurbanministries.org. Family, food, and fun at Hessel Park, August the 12th. We'll see you there.
Pepsi-Cola Champaign-Urbana Bottling is getting summer started with some fresh new products. Take a break from the sun and get a taste of cool, crisp, refreshing, starry lemon-lime flavored soda. Stay hydrated with Gatorade's new Fast Twitch Energy Drink and get your daily source of vitamin A and C with Gatorade Fit. Find your afternoon pick-me-up with Starbucks Caramel and White Chocolate Mocha Frappuccino Mini Cans. Order these delicious beverages and everything else with Pepsi-Cola Champaign-Urbana Bottling Company. Visit PepsiColaCU.com PDAutomotive.com.
PDA Automotive has now been serving the Champaign-Urbana area for over 50 years. To give you some perspective, 50 years ago ended the U.S. involvement in the Vietnam War, and it was when Secretariat won the Triple Crown. So what does that mean for you and your vehicle? Whether you need a carburetor overhauled or your new vehicle computer system diagnosed or programmed, PDA Automotive has the experienced, knowledgeable staff that can handle all your automotive needs. Online at PDRauto.com, they are what's best for your truck or car. They are PDR.
Want unbeatable prices on your next furniture purchase, but also seeking that local hometown feel? Look no further than Kelsey Furniture in Tuscola. Customers rave about their friendly, established staff, as well as their great selection, amazing prices, and second-to-none delivery service. They're a third-generation local business, and they've always got your best interests at heart. Find the look you love for less. Open 9 to 5 Monday through Saturday, but always available online at KelseyFurniture.com. That's KelseyFurniture.com.
Illini fans, take the opportunity to head down to Game Day Spirits Green Street location this summer. Shop their awesome selection of Fighting Illini merchandise. While you're there, shop some of their awesome buy one, get one free t-shirt designs, as well as their Nike section and so much more. With new styles coming in daily, there's sure to be something for every Illini fan. Shop at the corner of Neal and Kirby in Champaign, 6th and Green in Campustown, and online 24/7 at GameDaySpirit.com. Game Day Spirit, where Illini fans shop.
If you're looking for a pre-owned car, truck, or van, look no further than Sarah Champaign. You know them for their five incredible vehicle brands, the BMW, Honda, Subaru, Buick, and GMC. But did you know they also have over 100 used cars, trucks, and vans in stock right now? And at Sarah Champaign, they will take care of you. You can trust them. And prices begin at under $2,000. Stop by Sarah Champaign. They're at Burwash and Savoy, or go online, sarahchampaign.com. That's Sarah, S-E-R. RRAChampaign.com. It's Emily Atkins. She owns something called Happy Healing. Tell me about what you have planned coming up.
September 9th, we have our spiritual spa day. We have three wellness practitioners coming. We have Brenda, who does sound bowl healings with crystal bowls, Drea, who does facials, and we have Emily, who does massages. So we'll be selling tickets, and so you'll have a half hour of each, and then I'll be there and we can make candles too. You can go to the website, happyhealing.us.
Hi, it's Stevie J. Sit back and relax and take the drive with Lante and Derek Piper. Weekdays 4 to 6 right here on ESPN Radio 93.5.
Back on the drive with Tane Piper, ESPN Radio 93.5. To update, Matthew Bailey had an injury there in the spring that made him miss the spring game. It was a foot injury,
I believe. Yeah. I forgot about him missing the spring game.
Foot injury was, this is from Joey Wagner's article on IlliniInquire.com. It was mentioned today, you're probably going to hear it here in this Brett Bielema clip, but Matthew Bailey will be out at least a week.
Okay.
As they go, starting with training camp. But he was in a walking boot back in the spring. It sounds like Bielema is still optimistic that he can be ready for the opener against Toledo, but as of right now, he is still on the shelf.
Do you remember, I'm giving you a thought here, a big defensive lineman for Illinois that could never overcome a foot injury? I bet one of our listeners will remember this. I bet they will. And it was within the last 10 years. But he was a big defensive lineman, and he continuously had stress fractures or something with his foot to where he couldn't play that much. And I remember thinking, I can't imagine being that big and walking around. Like, everybody's feet is halfway proportional, right? I mean, I know people have bigger feet. They might have size 14 or size 10 or whatever. But in proportion, I'm size like 11 or 10 and a half. If you're like a 13, I'm not that far behind you foot-wise. But I may only be, let's say I'm 240 and you're 3 whatever. Think about another 100 pounds on those feet. And I D'Angelo McCray. I think that's exactly right, Sean. Good call, man. Thank you on the U of I Line of Lake text line. But it was just one of those where he could never kind of beat that. And I bring that up because I hope this is just a one-off for Matt Bailey, because we need him in that secondary because he showed some promise, especially in that bowl game. So we'll see. We'll see what happens there. And that leads me to what are a couple of things that you're really interested in, minus Luke Altmyer. We're all interested in that, right? So what are some things you're interested in for this Illinois football team heading into the start of the season?
I think that on the note of Matthew Bailey, if we can start to hear about some secondary depth that's being established, not only just the guys that are in line to start, when you think about Tyler Strain and Tavion Nicholson and obviously Matthew Bailey, hoping he gets healthy here pretty soon, how those guys are looking and developing with Aaron Henry. The idea of Jim Leonard being around is very exciting for me. But you're going to need for some certain matchups.
Yeah.
Again, I'll go back to starting with Kansas with the way they love to air it out. I know you're in the Big Ten, and some of these, as you go down the schedule, maybe don't get matched up with a bunch of pass-heavy type of offenses. Right. Although when Wisconsin comes to town, it sounds like that's going to be something.
It's going to be weird.
That's a weird thing to pair together in a sentence. When Wisconsin comes to town, better watch out for the pass. No, not the tight end. They'll actually maybe throw to receivers.
Piper's drinking again.
Yeah, right. So what that ultimately looks like, because that could be a downfall for this team, is if the back end is that much of a weakness while you have the front seven, while you can seemingly stop the run pretty well because of the front line and then Tariq Barnes, Gabe Backus, those guys there at the second level. But and then also I think the pass rush should be pretty good. But if you make mistakes on the outside, whether even if it's just, you know, quick hitting stuff that the quarterback can get it out and you're not able to I just reminisced, unfortunately, on Zachary Franklin running slant route after slant route after slant route with UTSA. So that's something that could hurt you, and that needs to come into fruition as well. I think on the outside with your own receivers, I know that you bring back a lot, but let's be honest, it's not outside of Isaiah Williams, a very dynamic receiving core. Casey Washington had a little bit of a step forward last year, still a guy that
he still feels like that third down guy to me.
Yeah, still someone
now,
that
Pat Bryan had a pretty good
year. He did,
but you're right.
How does
your
Malik Elzey insert himself into that mix?
And
can he be a real playmaker as a true freshman?
I think he is. I think he does. I think he really does. I want to give my buddy Tim Hiley from Mount Zion. He and I were texting the other day. He always listens to our show the next day. And he was talking about how we were talking a little bit about replacing Chase Brown and stuff. You know, there's a lot of reasons you could worry about Illinois going into the season.
For sure.
One being you had a Heisman candidate that you got to replace. And he mentioned he wasn't as concerned about that. He thinks the line, we still are powerful up front on the line on both sides, and that's going to be the key. And I'm with him. On the back end, to your point about the secondary, he mentioned, and it did seem like last year we played a lot of man because you could. And I wonder, and he mentioned, I want to give Tim the credit, that we'll see a lot more zone out of this team and try to kind of fool quarterbacks into where exactly are they protecting, in the sense that by the time the quarterback figures it out, one of these guys, Seth Coleman, you know, Johnny Newton, pick a guy, Keith Randolph, whomever.
Gabe Backus,
thank you. Oh, yeah, I just kind of forgot the freshman All-American. By the time the QB realizes it, then boom, they're on him. And so when he brought that up, I thought, you know, Tim, that does make some sense. Now, I don't know enough about football in terms of understanding that. I'm not going to – I think I do, but I'm not going to try to go into detail with something and try to fool people and that I know. But I'm anxious to talk to Jay Lehman about that and how will the secondary – not only will there be new guys, but do they now play a different style – or do you stick with more of a man kind of pressure, kind of, you know, in your face kind of defense? Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see when that rolls around.
Good point.
So I love your point about the secondary. I think that's a great one. I'm also anxious to see who I know Love would be the guy, or McCray, but kind of who turns out to be more of the bell cow this year. Is it Love, or do you just go ahead and give McCray the majority? I'm assuming everybody's healthy. Do you give McCray the majority of the carries, and then Love is more your third down back? I'll just be interested to see. I mean, they use Chase a lot, like 100 more carries than they wanted to. So I think that you're going to see a lot of different guys going in, and you've got that talent to do that. But That's another thing. I mean, because I think one of the huge things last year was obviously DeVito's completion percentage, but also the fact that we could run the ball. We could maintain drives by running the football. And when you're able to do that, you wear down a defense, and that's a good way to win games. Plus, you keep your defense off the field because you're winning the time of possession so that when your defense is on the field and they were as good as they were last year, they're even more dominant. Mm-hmm. So those are a couple of things that that I'm kind of interested in as we go. Heath even said, seems like our running game dropped off if Chase wasn't playing. We need a back to step up, and that big guy never getting over foot injuries makes me worry about McCray, and that's a good point there. In terms of Josh, isn't Hugh Robertson? He's still on the team, so you still got an Australian kicker, mate. He got better late.
He did. He had some
but
struggles.
But he's got to get good.
He had some struggles.
They've got the young man from El Paso, Delcon or something. I can't think of his name, but he was he was one of the top punters in the country, and right over here in El Paso, Illinois, and you've got him now. Dukley or something. I don't.
I'll look it up.
He's a big dude. I know he showed up at a camp that Andrew was at, not football. It was basketball, but he came and just spoke to the kids and stuff, and Andrew loved him. Said he was a great kid. So, yeah.
Everybody wants to talk about the PI there against Michigan, but the punt that led before that final drive
for
Michigan was not ideal.
Nope. No. He's got to get better. And he got a little bit better. I think in the bowl game he was averaging over 40. But, yeah, he certainly, for a team that played as well as they did and did some great things and we were all excited about it, certainly your punting was not a strength of that team. And Caleb Griffin, who made some big kicks, mm-hmm. made some big field goals, I want to see him a little bit more consistent. I'm sure he would tell you that as well. And then I'll just wait for the day that Caleb's hurt the one game and then the dude steps in and hits five field goals and you beat Iowa again.
Maybe then we'll finally remember his name.
You're right.
Fabrizio,
that's right.
Let's get Brett Bielema's thoughts going into training camp. He met with the media today. Here is your Illini head coach.
Obviously a very exciting day. I've been waiting for this one for a long time. No, our guys are excited. Had a great meeting this morning. We're actually practicing in the evening. Five of our first eight practices are in the evening since four of our first six games are in the evening. So we're kind of balancing that out between home and evening. You know, I also realize we don't have a bye week till bye week nine. So I'm doing a lot of different things to get to that point through our first 3 weeks of fall camp here before classes start. And then obviously we'll get two full weeks of game prep. Once we start school, which changes the rules, because then we change to a different set of NCAA rules allowing 20 hours per week and everything. So with the start of fall camp, we're actually pretty healthy. We have three guys that will be not out at practice tonight. Matt Bailey, first off, has got a checkup here literally in a couple days. If that gets all cleared, then we'll see where he can go, but expect him to be back a couple weeks out, 2 to 3 weeks out back from our opener. Jared Beatty, unfortunately, is just got a soft tissue issue that he's dealing with in the past, and he's starting limited, won't be out there today, but expect him back sooner than later. And then Dez Schuster has reported it and is fully able to go, anything from a compliance standpoint and all that goes into it. It's just there's some follow-up things he has to do to be fully able to participate in our practices, and that's just strictly a physical thing that we're waiting on and trying to get some clarity. So have more on that as we go forward. But other than that, we should be good to go.
Getting ready to start year three. Just what are some thoughts on the improvement in the program going into the third year?
Yeah, I think one of the things as a head coach you're always guarded against is just outside expectations and optimism. It's good to have it. I pointed out, obviously, that my first year I used to put on the beginning and end of every meeting 14-14, where the media had picked us the pace to finish 14-14 that first year. And obviously the math has changed a little bit, but I've always told those guys, listen, not one tackle, not one touchdown, not 1 yard gain or loss carries from last year to this year. So it's about the 12 guaranteed opportunities we have in front of us this year. And I think our guys are excited about it. I know there's a lot of outside expectations, but I tell the guys the expectation in this room is what matters. And for me as a head coach, I hope their expectations are even higher than mine.
Just for clarity, Matt, is that the same thing he was dealing with in the spring?
Yes.
And then I guess, how much does that spring, like what you guys were able to accomplish in terms of positioning in the defensive backfield, how much can you carry over fall, knowing you have new faces.
Yeah, that's a good thing. We actually did add, a number of new guys, a couple safeties, a couple corners that we haven't seen at all, literally. I mean, we've been able to work out with them mildly during this summer, but the NCAA rules don't allow certain things to happen. So tonight will be the first time we've been with them on the grass in a football capacity standpoint. So I'm very excited for that because I think their skill set, as well as some of the incoming freshmen, very excited to get our hands on a couple high school players too that we think may have the ability. We look at Matt Bailey, right? He's a guy that was literally one of our, I think, our last offers in his class, and ended up being one of the major contributors. Him and Xavier ended up being the two biggest contributors out of his class in the back end. So excited to see some of these freshmen as well.
Was it always your intention to add a few more defensive backs, or did you maybe come to that after spring ball?
No, I think when we had the conclusion of the season, obviously we lost a lot of really good players in that back end. What was awesome byproduct of that is we really had a great look at our players during the bowl game preparation. When a couple guys didn't play, that opened up the window there. So you saw that, which kind of not changed my math, but made me think about where we were at and what we need to do. And then that first wave of true portals and transfers and all that goes in January. And then I think after spring ball, we took an assessment of, okay, what do we have? Where do we think we need? And then the door opened up for a couple guys, Hill and Bush, as well as a couple other guys that we were able to get in the program. And I think we're always trying to acquire players, but I do think we use the portal kind of as a way to supplement areas we might have concerns at. I don't think you take a guy in the portal as your desire to make him a day one starter. Sometimes it happens, but that's more of a byproduct.
With the night game thing, tell me how you come to that decision. Is it purely get their bodies ready, get their minds ready to be playing at night? Is it more like, all day kind of thing, the preparation of what they need to go through for those game days?
The biggest one is easy to identify. It's just a different game catching the ball under lights, right? So not just for receivers, but big time with the kick returners, punt returners. Just can't be simulated. We did hit a heavy stretch of high heat there for a little bit. So I think these first three practices, we're going to go Thursday, Friday, Saturday. We limit the area we're in down in the red area. In addition to that, I knew practicing at night would be cooler than it is during the day. So that's really the two key ingredients as far as the night games, when they're scheduled. We really have no control over that, but I do know that we talk to our players a lot about how they approach the idea of a night game versus a day game. So the biggest thing we're going to do is our two scrimmages, where by NCAA rules we're allotted true two full. We're going to do three things. They're going to be at night. We'll do our pregame meal 4 hours out before the game, like we do for all games, right? So if we play at 7 o'clock at night, 4 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 11 o'clock, there's always a pregame meal 4 hours out. And the other thing, because we have new uniforms, we'll actually put our players in their game day uniforms for those two scrimmages. The first scrimmage we'll have offense probably in the home and defense in a way, and then we'll flip it for the second one and make it as real a game day situation as we can on the lights.
And do you have a preference, like a personal preference, like on a Saturday, to be playing at 11 a.m. or to be playing at 7 p.m.? Does it matter to you?
No, as a head coach, I used to really, I believe my first year we went 12-1. I believe all 13 games were at 11 o'clock. And the only benefit to that is you truly just are done for the day. Like, I'd rather just get up and get going. But I know a lot of our kids love playing at night. I think a lot of fans like playing the night games. I think when I got into coaching, everybody used to love the 1 o'clock game. Those don't even exist anymore, right? So it's a little bit of just, hey, tell me what we got to play, when we got to do it. I really, in my 15th year as a head coach, I don't think it affects the players very much as much as I used to. We practice in the morning sometimes. I used to get concerned. Reason one of the hesitations I stopped, I didn't go to practice in the morning because that's by far the best time to practice, was I used to think it would affect our players, but I think they can roll any time now.
Coach, depth chart-wise, how much did you get figured out in the spring, and how much of that carries over here into fall camp?
Well, there's a lot a carryover for sure. When we got done with spring ball, we sat down as a staff, said, hey, what do we think? Not only in your position room, so all the coaches, hey, this is where I'm at. I think these five guys are going to contribute these three roles, or however you will lay it out. Take for instance, everybody always wants to know how you're going to replace Chase Brown. Well, you don't replace Chase Brown, but you replace Chase Brown productivity, right? And who's going to do that? We have two players with veteran experience with Reggie and Josh, and then we have a trio of three freshmen that we feel are going to replace those numbers. So that's one aspect. I think the other thing defensively is, okay, in our room now, where do we have strengths? We have a really strong outside linebacker room. We have obviously a very solid group of defensive linemen. On the offense side of the ball, we have a pair of a guard and tackle that, you know, I feel might be one of the better tandem of guys I've had in my career. I have a first-time starter at center, you know, whatever end of direction that goes. Josh had a great summer. So it's just kind of an inventory of everything, and then affects how we enter fall camp. But by no means are we solidified to anything. I think these first, for sure, these first eight practices, there's a lot of finding out where we're at.
Because the polls come out, talk to the vibes come out next week. Do you care at all if you're in there or not in there? Can you work both ways?
You know, there's an outside factor there, right? In this building, I don't think they're really going to care one way or the other. Right. I think there's a certain pride, right, that you have to it. But I do recognize in recruiting, right, like you're going to write an article like, this team's ranked, this team's not ranked, or they've been ranked X number of weeks in a row. We're into those conversations. But I do think that myself, to our team, to the way we play, we're better when we're the underdog. So each week, I think we always go into how do we match up this week and what's being said.
Do you have clarity on when you might get a timeline for Dez's future?
No. I know he's actually literally going through some assessments today. So I don't think it's going to be anything quick. And all we do is just continue to be with him and support him and see where things go.
Nice role. Josh Cruz, I mean, after seeing him in the spring, how comfortable do you feel giving him kind of a bigger opportunity at the center position than maybe it?
Well, Josh has been impressive, you know, since I got here. And Josh was one of those players that had signed before I ever came here, so I didn't have the pleasure of recruiting him or being around his family. Obviously, his dad is a very well-established person and all that goes into it. But to recruit his little brother and then now to have them both here, you know, Josh has been a guy, in my opinion, has taken advantage of every opportunity. We played him as a true freshman, even though it was probably a little bit more than what he was prepared for, but we did it, and it is paying off dividends now. An incredible football IQ. I think when I listen to Julian Pearl, Isaiah Adams, Zy Chrysler, Jordan Slaughter, like those guys speak so highly of Josh's football IQ, his ability to communicate. He's a football guy, and it shows every day.
For Josh McCray, how did you see him navigate what was a really up and down season?
And what I felt, you know, and I tried to really help Josh through the moment of it, is it was a lot of things that were out of his control, right? Like you can't handle what happened to his first injury, and then you can't control what happened to the first injury, and his second injury was right on the heels of just coming back in from his first one. And it's a lot of times that double punch that get kids in a funk, and I give Josh a lot of credit. Worked really hard on his physical approach, his demeanor. I think since the arrival of Thad Ward, like Josh has had a really, I think a tremendous spike in football, just everything that he does. I've been very impressed with the relationship that Thad's built in that room with every player, but I think for Josh especially, it's been pretty good and rewarding. So I'm excited to see where he comes into fall camp. He's healthy, he looks good. Reggie does too, the three freshmen. We got five guys in that room that are all kind of little different body types. Overall, it's a pretty big room, but also, you know, Aiden Loffrey, you know, presents a unique opportunity there for us. And Reggie's kind of a blend. I would say Josh is too. Obviously, Jordan and Caden are big boys that play games with big pads on, and I'm excited to see them grow.
At the quarterback position, is there an ideal timeline when you say, this is the guy we're going to run out there against Toledo and start game planning for that?
Yeah, I think you guys probably have followed me for a couple of years. Like, I do think that, you know, 2 weeks out from the game, it's important for anybody and everybody in our building, right? Like, you guys will be a byproduct of it, but, like, I think it's important for our building to know who's the one quarterback. So you work with one wide receiver, you work with one tight ends and one snapper and that kind of scenario. But up until then, I think we had some really good growth in the spring. I think we have about four guys that really have made tremendous growth. Obviously, Cal Swanson, the incoming freshman, did some nice things. But, you know, between Luke, between John, between Donovan, between Michelle, like those four guys really got better, and I'm excited to see them tonight.
Are the first few days of camp just fairly standard year to year, or do you tailor things, tweak things for the group?
Yeah. The actual practice?
Yeah, just what you do.
I told them today in a meeting this morning, right, like this is my 15th year, and I promise you guys that there are so many guys in that room that have been around me in different stages of my life, you know, guys that were former players, guys that were former coaches, guys that have been with me, guys that have come back. And I've kind of shared with them over the last 2 weeks as we've met, like, this is a camp that I promise you have never seen before, right? Like, now, practice format, there's a lot of carryover, but I can tell you right now from practice one through eight, right, we have more evening practice than we've ever had because we got a lot of night games on the front. So that's the first quick adjustment, but how we do, what we do, I think we got a lot of veteran players, so I kind of accelerated the process a little bit more than others, especially with the ones, the guys that we feel can handle it, ones and twos. I've worked in a lot more Devo because I think we got some young players that I want to see what they can do. And then in addition to that, I have five of my 10 coaches that are in new roles. Obviously, Aaron Henry's here, but he's in a new role as a coordinator, and I have four new coaches doing new things. So I really want to make sure that I'm on the same page with what they're saying, what they're doing, and what their players are seeing and hearing. So there's a lot of detail to this camp, and I'm excited to watch.
The sports betting stories that have come out of like Iowa and Iowa State, it's a brave new world with kids being able to bet from their phones and things like that. What safeguards do you have in place for such like that? I know you've spoken to it before.
Yeah.
It's in the news today.
No, it's obviously just the, I always tell our players, let's pay attention to college football, right? And there's two main storylines out there, that world and obviously the situation in Northwestern. So I think it brings awareness into our building, which is a good thing. We constantly educate our players and where it is. I think the part that I've really benefited on, sometimes I don't even realize when you're in these moments, I came to work for a AD who's a lawyer, right? And like that element of compliance and all that has always been a premium. But, from what I've gathered, some of this stuff was high school behavior that, found its way, creeped its way into college and everything else. We've made a lot of, conscientious efforts to say even before any of that hit, but it's a great reminder for everybody to kind of get into it. We addressed it when it came out. We address it in meetings. I know when we come back as student athletes in the fall, the university has a whole agenda to put in front of them. It's a great reminder for everybody affiliated. Some of this stuff sounds like coming out and reading between the lines. It's not just with student athletes, but it's by support staff and student athletes around the program. So, I literally met yesterday with every student athlete trainer, equipment manager, and nutritionist, any of the student athletes that touch our players, because obviously there's interaction there, and that's the stuff that you worry about.
It's time for a couple more here.
Jimmy is in the building. Yep.
What's been the reaction of the coaches and the players to have him?
Jimmy had visited us a little bit last spring, not in the same role he's in now, but he and I have had a long-standing relationship. So I literally kind of said to the staff last spring when he came in for a day or two, he was here at Pro Day. I don't know if you guys, anybody picked up on it. Jimmy can slide the hat on and kind of go into the radar, literally. I think the coaches, he had a lot of conversations with me, with Aaron. Aaron and him had known each other a long time. Antonio Fennell's worked with him when he was at Wisconsin. J-Mo knew him. Andy knew him. Charlie Bowen obviously knew who he was. On the offense side of the ball, Barry and Lunny and him have really struck up a good relationship. Barry's been, it's been fun to watch Barry's reactions. I know Jimmy, I know Barry, and I knew there'd be a great commonplace there. Also, like Ben Miller is in our building as an analyst. Obviously, I hired Robbie Dish as our special teams guy. Jim had a really good career as a defensive player, but he's also a really good return guy and really played valuable roles in special teams. So Jim's going to touch our program in a lot of ways. I'm excited to have – anytime he's going to bring a good football mind in his building is a good thing. He won't be with us on games, home or away, but he'll kind of be ahead of the game like an analyst, and he'll touch literally all three phases of the game, offense, defense, special teams. I'm sure some people will find their way to his office, but he can't be on the field, can't really be involved in off-campus recruiting, but really excited to have him in the building.
You spoke about having a late bye week. Do you think that puts you at a disadvantage because of just having to wait so long to get a full week of rest?
The part that I always say about schedule, we've had week zero the last 2 weeks, which has given us two bye weeks. I think the more important avenue, I appreciate the question, is that we only have one bye week this year. So as players that have been with me and as coaches have been with me, this is the first time we're going to have one bye week. It literally comes after the eighth game of the season, but you schedule your season to take advantage of it at its best. I've always seen a bye week as an opportunity to, get a little bit of recovery. So we'll take advantage of it how best we can. But like I said, there's a lot of things in this first 3 weeks and then 2 weeks leading into the first game that I'm taking under consideration to know that we don't have anything in a break until week 8. And that week 8 game is a Wisconsin game.